Welcome to Worst Ever.
Welcome to Worst Ever Podcast.
Welcome to Worst Ever Podcast. I'm your host, Christine Lakin.
She's semi-host, Christine Lakin, and I'm your host, Ala Khaled.
Ugh. Today on the show, we have my friend.
And my friend, too.
Sort of. He's really
He's my friend through you.
He's really, I feel like we're a lot closer, but anyway. Rory O'Malley.
You know him from Broadway's.
You know him from Broadway's Book of Mormon.
Correct.
In which he was nominated for a Tony Award. That's right. We have a Tony nominee on our podcast.
Correct.
I feel like we're really jumping up some levels here.
I'm waiting for that Oscar nominee.
I was thinking if we got like a satellite award nominee that we would be somewhere. But I mean, a Tony nominee, God. He is also currently starring in the musical Hamilton. It's a little tiny thing. I think it's about history or something. I don't know if you've
heard of it. There's a lot of rapping.
Yes, he's starring as King George in Hamilton. Was on Broadway, is now doing the tour.
Correct.
Very exciting. You might also know him from Partners, which was a show he was on with Kelsey Grammer for a while.
That's right.
But I know Rory from way back in the day, back when we were just two hopeful kids at the Falcon Theater in Burbank. And we're going to get into this and a lot of other funny stories about kind of our youth.
And unfortunately, I'm not even in the room for this.
No, I think fortunately, you were not in the room.
Unfortunately,
for this.
I'm in Chicago.
I have to say, I kind of feel like it was almost better this way because, you know, A, you didn't eat my food, and B, we could cut you out. Like, we just put you on mute sometimes.
That's weird because I put you on mute a lot of times while I was ordering vodka sodas.
So many vodka sodas. I'm really sorry. To our listeners, I apologize right now. He's drunk and more annoying than usual.
All right. Let's get to Rory. Yeah.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, I will.
The worst moments of our life.
Hey, girl. Hey, that's bad.
So speaking of like worst ever experiences.
That is the worst ever.
I don't feel so good.
And that was my worst audition ever.
How bad can it be?
And we feel the pain is best served funny.
Will you order me another cocktail? Vodka, it's a Tito's soda lime. Thank you.
Who's he talking to?
Who, are you at the hotel bar?
I am.
Welcome to the podcast. You are
Thank
listening
you.
To Worst Ever Podcast. My name is Christine Lakin.
And I'm Ala Khaled.
He is currently via satellite from Chicago. At a bar where he's ordering Tito's and lime at 3 in the afternoon.
Tito's and soda with lime.
Okay, great. We're doing something a little different this week. Ala had to be in Chicago, so we are attempting to do this via satellite. He's very excited about it. But I am actually in person in studio with, as always, Stephen Ray Morris and the lovely, the talented, the amazing, and my friend, Rory O'Malley.
Hi,
Rory. Thank you so much for being here.
I don't see you in person. I'm sad.
I know. Well, you when you get back, we'll hang out.
So for those of you who maybe aren't Broadway fans, I'm going to tell you and brag a little bit about my friend Rory. Rory and I met here in California. We were in a theater company together, the Troubadour Theater Company.
That's right.
And we also did Happy Days the Musical for Gary Marshall. I played Joni Cunningham.
Genius.
And I was Richie.
So we were brother and sister on stage. It was very cute. And then Rory left LA and went to pursue bigger dreams in New York. And I remember at the time you had a manager who literally said, "What are you going to do in New York? They're starving in the streets," or something like that.
She said, "New York? My God, they're starving in New York.
What are you going to do there? Why would you do that? Because you were like, I'm a theater actor, and what am I doing in Los Angeles?
I was like, I literally just do theater in LA. It's really fun.
I'm starving in Los Angeles.
I hear they pay for it in other places. I think I'm going to move to New York. And within 6 months, I was in Spelling Bee on Broadway. And it
was she taking commission from that?
No, she wasn't, because she literally ended her relationship with me because I moved to New York.
And you were going to be starving and she could have no part in that.
Right.
And then from Spelling Bee, you started doing...
Rory, did you find it much different auditioning wise in New York than LA?
Yeah. No, it's very different in New York, especially New York theater, because, you know, there's cattle calls in a way that LA maybe for some commercials has, but like for Broadway shows, the cattle calls are like 100 people at 7 a.m. trying to get into an audition, and they have 16 or 32 measures that they have to like do in front of a casting director and figure out if they're good enough to be in the show. And so you have people waiting outside the building just to get into the audition room at like 6 a.m. It's crazy. I remember my first audition in New York. I was so horrible that, you know, I was waiting for hours outside the audition room. I get in there. I sing the song. It was for Hairspray on Broadway. I was like, I'm going to show up and be in this show. And I sang, and the casting director went, "Wow, that was loud."
Oh, no.
And I said, "Thank you. Bye now."
Bye now.
And I did not get to be in Hairspray.
But you did get cast in some workshops for a new musical. Mm. And at the time, like, sorry, it's my dog. At the time, were you like, this is, I mean, it was a pretty big workshop, obviously, with the creators. Do you want to tell people what it was?
Yeah, I was sitting at my temp job at a financial firm. I was sitting at my desk, and my agent in New York called and said that the writers of South Park were working on a new musical, and nobody knew what it was about. But I knew what it was about, because when I moved from LA to New York, I stopped in Utah, where my cousin lives. And my cousin Danny, who's in real estate, not in the business, said, "Dude, when you get to New York, you got to look into this Mormon musical I read about on the internet." He did. He printed out a piece of paper. He was like, "This is the guys who write South Park, Matt and Trey. They're writing this musical about Mormons. You'd be perfect for it, dude."
Oh,
I was like,
God.
"Okay, Danny. Well, you don't like get through the Lincoln Tunnel and say, I would like to be in this musical. Thank you."
Right.
And a year later, after being, you know, a temp at this financial firm, my agent calls and says that Matt and Trey are writing a new musical. It's top secret. And I had been asked to be a part of the ensemble, with no other qualifications other than the fact that I could sing and I was the whitest person who ever walked the planet.
So, but how did they know you? How did they know you?
Well, because of a bunch of those failed cattle call auditions, I went into Carrie Gardner, who was the casting director for Mormon and was the casting director for The Roundabout. I had auditioned and not gotten the part many, many times. For a year.
Worst auditions ever.
Yes.
And then they basically turned into,
yeah,
a, hey, would you come like do this reading thing?
Yeah.
Where you get paid. For those of you who've never done a musical reading, I've done lots of them.
Yeah.
Where the musicals haven't actually gone to Broadway.
Right.
But,
me too.
Yeah.
This is
and
the one.
You get, it's like a stipend. They give you a stipend, and it's usually 2 or 3 weeks, and you work on it, and then you put it up, and investors come to a little space, and you do it very bare bones, and then it's to try to get money, right? To do the show.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this was.
I mean, they basically use you to sell their musical.
Right. And there's no guarantee that you'll ever move on with the show.
No.
Usually you don't.
The thing is that I never technically auditioned for the Book of Mormon. However, there was a 3-year process of writing it, which were 3 readings and 2 workshops, which were. Let's face it, those were the auditions.
Right.
You know, if they didn't want me to do it, they wouldn't ask me to come back. So it was not an audition, but it was also the most
intense.
Strenuous, intense audition of my life that lasted 3 years.
And then you sang a really pivotal song in that show. I'm sure a lot of people would remember this, no matter what incarnation of the Book of Mormon you have seen, but you originated the role on Broadway. And sang the song,
Turn It Off. Yes.
Which is so funny.
And Elder McKinley. When I started with the show, I was in the ensemble, and I had one bit in the opening number, Hello, where I just kept hitting the doorbell passive-aggressively as a passive-aggressive Mormon. And they were like, oh, that kid's funny, and let's give him a line in the next reading. Let's make him the head of the mission. And so the next time we did a reading, all of a sudden I had this little scene. And then the next reading, all of a sudden there was a song there called Turn It Off. And then the workshop, the next time there was a verse in Turn It Off where my character was a openly closeted gay man.
Right.
Who was like, it's okay that you're gay, just turn it off.
Right. You know? And wow, I didn't realize that that was, I mean, that really came about because they started writing for you pretty much because they liked you and they were like, oh, that's another funny character.
It was line by line.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Well, it just shows also that like that these writers are TV writers because that's what they do a lot with television is they write for the actors. And that's very strange on Broadway, I would assume.
Oh, no. Let me tell you, as much as we knew that these were geniuses working, we would come back from a hiatus of like 6 months after the last reading. We'd get into the room and we'd be so excited to see the rewrites and to be like, what did they come up with next? And we'd get the material and there would literally not be one change. And we'd be like, oh no, they didn't do any work. And then they would be, Matt, Trey, and Bobby would be in a room next door. And while we relearned all the stuff that we had done 6 months before, they were writing.
Like revising.
I believe. They were doing something because, and then they would come out and show us after a day of writing the funniest song we'd ever heard. You know?
Wow.
And was like, that's not how it's done on Broadway. On Broadway, it's like, oh, it takes all these months. But for these TV writers, they're used to producing an episode in 5 days.
Oh, and that's how they do South Park, too.
Yeah. That's just how it's done for them.
That apparently is one of the shortest amount of times. I mean, they're writing and recording those episodes and animating. Their animation is obviously a little more crude.
Yeah.
But it is such a short turnaround where it's unheard of. I mean, Family Guy, you'll do an episode, record, and you won't see it on air for 8, 9, 12 months.
Yeah.
And theirs is like something crazy, like 8 weeks.
Have you ever done a South Park episode, Rory?
I've done a few. Yeah. Yeah. And I basically just hang out there whenever I'm. Whenever I can. They don't film for very long. It's just like September to through December now. But I just go hang out, watch Trey do the voice. Matt and Trey doing the voices in the studio is
That's probably one of
the coolest things ever. And I've gotten to do a couple of characters when Trey will literally be like, oh, Rory's here. Let's have him do this, you know? And
cool.
I've sang a few times.
It's awesome.
I think I was a couple of different characters, but I got shot in the head once. It was great. But it's literally the next day.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Wow.
How fast they move, which is why they're so topical.
Well, yeah, exactly. And
speaking
why
of shot in the head, sorry. I'm in Chicago. I told you briefly, but on every door here, like when you enter a building, there's a picture that has a gun with the circle and the cross over it saying no guns allowed.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was interesting.
Well, because they are having the worst ever with guns in Chicago.
Not great.
But I just was like, it was at the airport.
Old?
I was like, that's weird.
Old signs?
And
then like from the mob days or what?
I'm going to take a picture of it. It's like literally a pistol.
Okay. Yeah, because there's so much gun violence in Chicago right now.
Well, I was just cracking up because I saw it at the airport. I was like, okay, well, that's kind of weird. And then I got to my hotel and right outside the hotel door, same thing. Then I walked to this like restaurant, same thing. I was like, what the hell's happening here?
Wow. But you know how in LA
I'm scared for my life.
They have letters outside restaurants.
No cell phones.
In Chicago, it's if you're allowed to bring your gun or not.
Right. So I want to get back. So you did all of these readings. They basically wrote a song for you. You opened the show on Broadway.
Yeah.
And then 9 months, a year later, you were nominated for a Tony.
Right. Well, it actually happened even faster than that because we opened March 24th and the nominations came out 6 weeks later.
Oh, my God.
So this is the thing is that I started that journey as a part of the ensemble and really when we opened was when I realized like, oh, you're a principal in the show because the writing had been done.
Right.
This is what the show is. And I realized I was a supporting character. So when I was nominated for a Tony, I didn't even really think I was eligible. I was like, oh, okay. Like the people like, you know, oh, sure. You were shocked. Yes. I did not realize that that was in the realm of possibility.
You know who was really shocked? Your old manager.
Who?
Did she call you? Was she like, listen, we should rethink about this partnership?
She called me. Yes. I did not hear from her for years. And then all of a sudden, I get nominated for a Tony, and she called and wanted to have a conversation with me. And she's one of those people who I know she's not going to listen to this podcast because she didn't have email. She's not going to. I don't think she's on.
She had a facsimile. She faxed you things.
She faxed me things. I'm not kidding. I could do a whole hour on that manager, and Christine knows it. But she called and she left this whole message, and she's one of those people that would leave a message, and it's like they're having a conversation with somebody else, and you called them.
Oh,
do you know what I mean? I'm bothering her by letting my voicemail record this conversation that she's been having, and she had a full conversation with me, and I didn't call her back, and I had to talk with my husband about it, and I said, I don't know if I can let this woman get wrapped up in my life again.
I don't. Yeah,
you
and
know,
she made it very clear that you were going to starve in the streets of New York,
right.
And she was washing her hands of you.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
had,
you know,
and I had to like, I actually.
I mean,
had
she
to,
pretty much said you were going to live in the gutter.
She
yeah.
did.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I mean, and she used to when I lived in LA before I moved to New York, we would go to dinner and to movies, and it would be like these long nights, and I realized we were just friends, and I am actually I am very grateful to her, to be honest, because she got me my first job at the Falcon. Like, the reason that I know you,
yeah,
is because I had a manager who sent me out on auditions, and I didn't know what I was doing in LA.
Well, and Rory, like I said, Rory and I, we got to be really close when we did Happy Days the musical, and it was such a blast. Joey McIntyre, for those of you who watch Hollywood Darlings and maybe Return of the Mac, Joey McIntyre was our Fonzie in one of these incarnations.
Which is that really, like, I had to double check that was happening, that you had a show and then Joey had a show.
Isn't it funny?
Like, well, what are our parents from Happy Days doing?
I just saw Fred Applegate. He plays Pete Holmes' father on Crashing.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, it's a small, small world.
Yeah.
But there was a moment. So I have to tell this story because it was one of the funniest things that has ever happened to me on stage. And, you know, live theater is just ripe when something goes wrong. Oh, boy, does it go totally wrong.
Yeah.
So there was a jukebox, basically, this large jukebox set. And
it was like the band was on top of it.
The band was on top of the jukebox. The jukebox had these doors that would open and close through various parts of the show. And there was a counter, sort of like a dinette.
Right.
And it would get pushed in and out for various scenes. So the top of the show.
For Arnold's.
The top of the show, the doors are closed and the overture is playing. And they had decided to use a hazer. They were going to introduce a hazer into the show. And so we're all backstage getting ready to, you know, Sunday, Monday, Happy Days.
Right.
And the jukebox doors open and we burst out in our 50s gear and we're Sunday, Monday, and we're doing all of our, you know, Lindy hop steps, and there's haze and it's beautiful.
Welcome
right?
to Wisconsin,
Welcome
everyone.
Welcome to Wisconsin, exactly. So the doors are closed. They decided to use this hazer. It was one night that the hazer malfunctioned and started way too early. And
we're all in there.
It was becoming like
locked
a hot
in.
Box.
Locked in.
In this jukebox backstage. Like it
We're
was,
being gassed. Like
it was so smoky.
It was.
I couldn't see anyone.
Horrible.
We're all
we
like,
couldn't. We couldn't see each other. It wasn't funny. We were like starting
like,
to
oh,
panic.
No.
Like,
oh,
oh my
oh,
god,
no. oh, god,
I can't breathe. It's the start of the show, and we're in this little confined box, this jukebox, getting gassed, and we're like, it's gonna be okay. Oh, so finally the cue happens. The doors open, and the entire cast runs for their life onto the stage.
Like the
That's
front,
the start of the show.
There's smoke, just a billowing.
And this is a 130-seat theater. The entire theater, the Falcon,
is gassed. Everything is, it's so, we're fanning.
It's about the fog now.
It's awful.
The fog came into Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And it took lives.
But then I can't stop laughing because it's just the dumbest thing that's ever happened. And I'm looking at Rory and we're all just trying to sing and get through the song.
Everyone's
and
laughing.
I am crying. There are tears in my eyes. And I just remember Rory looking at me and you had to sing something.
I had to sing the whole opening. I was the jerk playing Richie who had to be like, "Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is my sister. Here's my parents. Here's my girlfriend. And then here is the Fonz." So, like, everyone else is just kind of like
all the exposition.
Laughing. Nobody was even looking at the audience. They were all looking upstage because they couldn't conceal their laughter. While I am, it looks like I'm sobbing because I'm laughing so hard on the inside that I just start crying. You know, like when you can't laugh, so you just start crying.
How long does it take for the smoke to clear?
Oh God! It wasn't. It was into like the third
intermission.
Song, I think.
Intermission
yeah.
is really when
bad.
It was when it
oh
was
my
gone.
Gosh.
It was hilarious to us though. But we would do all these things to each other. Like, you know, there was one point like Rory would have to like lean over the dinette at Arnold's, and I had to like stand right behind him or like perch on the side, and we would be like poking each other in the butt. And just, I mean, you know, it's all the things you do on stage when you're into a show and you just start like, you know, having a lot of fun with each other. We had a blast.
Oh my God,
that.
We had so much fun.
It was really fun. So let's get back to you. So you get this Tony nomination.
Right.
You're ecstatic, surprised. Mm. Hold on a second. All the Tony-ness starts to happen.
Yeah.
Wait, who are you up against, by the way?
I was up against two wonderful actors from the Scottsboro Boys, which had closed. I was up against an actor in Anything Goes, and I was up against John Larroquette from Night Court, who was in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying with Daniel Radcliffe.
Right. Okay, so you're thinking, so when this all starts
Well, first
happening-
of all, when I found out that day, I called my mom to tell her in Cleveland at her accounting job where she's, you know, not a part of the business. She has nothing. I told her and she said, "Oh my God, are you sure? How do you know?" "Well, don't tell anyone until we verify it." She was like so floored that this had happened. She just wanted to get more sources to confirm it. Because
your mom thought you were going to live in the gutter as well.
Absolutely. Oh, my mom would, you know, that ship had already sailed. She had raised a son to never be able to feed himself. It was crazy. It just was so unexpected. And the show was just kind of swept up and had been nominated for like 14 awards.
Yeah.
And yeah, it
that
was
That song
crazy.
Was so pivotal. I mean, it's crazy that from, you know, well, it's not really, it makes perfect sense that from Book of Mormon to having them kind of write that song for you to now, for those of you who don't know, Rory plays the king in Hamilton.
Yes.
And is so funny and is maybe on stage for all of a combined 20 minutes.
Yeah, 9.5 is the king, and then I come in at the end as a part of the ensemble, and I call that character Lloyd.
And
I've given him a backstory.
I wish I knew all these characters you're talking about because I can't get a ticket.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Who can?
I'm so sorry.
I was very fortunate to see Rory do this in New York before you left the New York cast, and now he's on tour.
Yeah, but we're coming to L.A. You'll
again,
see in L.A.
Coming to L.A. Once again, like, the show is so incredible and so funny and wonderful, and you are the highlight. I mean, you are such a highlight. You need comedic relief, and I think that's why you're so memorable in it.
And Rory, you're obviously a comedic genius when it comes to musicality and everything. I mean, just you have that. You know what you're doing on stage. Obviously, it's like amazing.
Thank you.
And I read an article saying that you did Belle. So what was that?
Okay.
And how did that happen?
Oh, well, I've been working on that since I was 11. I was obsessed with Beauty and the Beast, and the opening number of Beauty and the Beast was just like the most glorious, wonderful thing to me ever. And I remember my mom taking me and my cousin Katie to see it at Westgate Mall. I remember what it made me feel like.
I remember seeing it for the first time too. Visceral.
It changed my life, and that opening number was, you know, It just was astounding to me. So I was an only child in Cleveland. I had no friends. I was just, you know, a pasty, husky gay boy who sang musicals by himself in his basement. So I would have to play all the parts. So I did every character in Beauty and the Beast, the opening number.
That's
Belle.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I've realized that that's really stayed with me. So I've performed that. You can find that on YouTube.
Oh my gosh, sure. We'll put that link up.
No, yeah. It's genius. The whole thing is genius. And so, like, you go to the producers of it was some event. Forgive me, I can't remember.
It was
for
the Covenant House. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. So for Covenant House. And then you say, I'm going to do Belle. I'm going to do the opening number.
Well,
and I'm playing all the characters.
They thought I was insane. What happened was is that they wanted me to sing You'll Be Back, the song from Hamilton. And it was like during the Tonys for Hamilton. So we couldn't really get permission because they wanted to keep everything on the stage and not have any, you know, other performances of it off the stage. And I said, well, I do have this other idea.
I do have this ditty that I perform in my basement.
Yeah. And they literally thought I was crazy, which I am. So they were right. But it was a childhood dream come true. And I got to sing it with a full orchestra. It was
glorious.
Oh,
my God. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. It was so much fun.
I mean, it really is. It's like coming full circle.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's get back to the Tonys. Keep talking about this.
Yeah.
So you're having all the Tony stuff happen, and it's like a whirlwind. There's luncheons and photo shoots.
Yes,
and
a lot of dry cleaning.
So much dry cleaning, so many outfits.
Yes.
And then you get to the night of the Tonys.
Yeah.
And you're there, and you go with Gerald.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there. Now, what's going through your head? Are you thinking to yourself, are you starting to hype yourself and be like, actually, I might have a shot?
I mean...
Or were you still like, are they sure?
to be honest, like... What you're thinking is, oh my God, I will throw up if I have to
get up there
and say something on national television, because it's so surreal.
Yeah.
That like you start to just really, at least for me, I just really did not want to win. And I don't mean that like I didn't want to win. Of course I wanted to win a Tony.
You didn't want to have to accept,
you know, like
the award.
Yeah, like in that moment, you are just like, oh
terrified.
My God. This is horrifying. And you go and you think, this can't be the Tonys. I'm here.
Right.
This has got to be the pretend Tonys. Like there's another Tony somewhere else and they like somebody's making fun of me. But what was great is that, you know, my mom was there. I had a whole bunch of friends who came to the city, and it kind of became about that rather than just the awards.
Yeah.
Importantly, where are you guys sitting? Because that's like, it tells a lot, like where this.
Yeah, if you're in the middle of that row, you're probably not winning. You got to be on an
I was I was sitting right in front of Josh Gad. It was like Andrew Rannells, then me on the aisle, and then we were all on the aisle, but it was like Andrew in front of me, then Josh behind me, and then Nikki was three or four rows behind us.
Oh.
And she's the one who won. So I don't know. Whoever plans that doesn't really know who's going to win. It's like basically who they think maybe, but she's the one who won. And when Nikki won, I don't remember a more exciting moment of Mormon than that moment, mm-hmm. because it was about her and it was so thrilling, and she gave this beautiful speech. And then I think my category was like one or two after that.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was up in the balcony, because you basically like have to pay thousands of dollars if you want more than your one guest,
right.
Which was my husband, Gerald, who was my boyfriend at the time. But I knew I needed him next to me. And I was right, because when they announced my category, Brooke Shields presented. It's very fresh in my mind.
I love her furniture.
Yes. So wonderful. Great glasses too. She said John Larroquette, and the camera that was on me started physically coming closer and closer to me. And, you know, I'm putting on my smile face and clapping, and the cameraman just keeps zooming in closer and closer. I was like, I'm happy. I'm thrilled for this man. Like, I didn't know why. Here, it was just because he was trying to get out of someone's way. But I literally thought they were like, you lost. Now show us your gratitude. You know, like, I was like,
we're going to get it out of you. You're really upset, aren't you?
Yeah. Like, I was like, I better not crack, you know, you don't even know what you're thinking. But at that moment, you know, it's the end of something.
Yeah.
You know, like, you've gone through a lot of these things. I've already lost to him at the drama desks, you know, like, you go through all the, like, you go through a lot of these little hurdles very, very quickly. And it's a wonderful experience, but it's not just that you lost. It's like, that's over.
Yeah.
That is the last moment of what's going to come from this.
Right.
And, you know, for the rest of the show, you're just kind of like soaking that in and letting and being like, okay, you know, I made the most of this moment and I'm proud of myself, but I was so glad that Gerald, my husband, was sitting next to me and not my mom, because my mom would have been like, it's okay, honey. Oh. You know, I'm proud of you. Oh, you win the Tony of my heart. You know, like, right, things like that. Like, what moms are supposed to say.
Right.
Whereas Gerald turned to me and said, I'm sorry, but I don't date losers. And literally, that's when I knew I had to marry him.
Yeah.
Because he's not an actor. He's not a performer. And it's the perfect, story of an example of why our relationship works and why he keeps me grounded.
Yeah.
Is that in that moment, he was like, you're at the Tony Awards, buddy.
Yeah.
Make sure you get over yourself, you know,
real, like, quick.
Yeah.
Cause, like, there's probably a shrimp buffet in our future.
Yeah. And I think that he knew, like, of course, if you are excited about something that you've dreamt about your whole life, you're there. You want to have the most of that experience. Of course you want to win, but he never let me
be, like, sad about not winning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a second, literally not for a second.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to make you sad a little bit. You should have won, dude.
Well, I appreciate that. But luckily, I saw Mr. John Larroquette perform in How to Succeed, and he was phenomenal. So,
well, I feel like that, and that really kind of lessens the blow. You know, if you're up for a role or up for an award, and then you don't win, but then you see the performance of the person who does, and you're like, oh, they are quite good. Oh, okay. I'm really happy to be in that company. No, I feel that way. But if they're bad, then I get really,
here's how I look at it. He came from a zero role, literally helped create the role just by being who he is. He gets nominated for a Tony, and then they fucking bust his balls, and he loses.
They're busting my balls.
Yeah.
So you know,
you're gonna have to get a Tony out of at some point, because it's gonna make me nuts.
Look, at this point, like, I got to be the king out of it, and that's reward enough.
So is this a tour, or what are you on right now?
Yeah, I did it in New York for the last year.
So you took over for Jonathan Groff.
I took over for Jonathan Groff. I was the first person to come into the original cast, and that's a whole other story.
Oh man.
Because I was doing another Broadway show that fell apart 3 weeks into rehearsals. And
that was the Nerds show, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that might be the worst Broadway story ever.
So wait, go tell us a little about that.
Because I was doing this new musical. I was living in LA, right? You were pregnant at the time.
Yep.
And I
You guys had decided to move back here.
Yes. Gerald and I got married. We were, you know, we're like, family track. Let's get more space. Live in Los Angeles. And I got this email. I was sitting in a Starbucks with Josh Gad, and it said, you are going, there's an offer for you to play Bill Gates in a new musical comedy called Nerds. And I was like, what is this? And Josh was like, I read about it. You have to do it. So I, all of a sudden, a month or two after really settling down in Los Angeles, my husband, a real person, has a job. I go to New York to start rehearsals for this new Broadway musical that was opening the same season as Hamilton. We're 3 weeks into rehearsal, and the lead producer walks in and says, everyone go home. An investor dropped out. we will not be opening on Broadway this season. And it was an episode of Smash.
Oh.
Fully.
And like, how many more weeks did you have until opening?
We were going to be moving into the theater like a week later.
Oh, wow.
We were, when that producer walked in and said that, we had just finished staging the finale. Where we were singing, live your dreams. Oh, hi, producer. What are you doing here?
And no then he way.
Ruined our dreams.
Go and pack.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it was crazy. But what happened was it sucked. It was awful. And not like it was sad for me, but, you know. The writers, the people.
Is
who
this Revenge of the Nerds or just Nerds?
No,
it's about
nerds.
Bill Gates.
It was about Bill Gates and Steve Jobs.
Oh.
It was this like over the top, fun, like really zany musical.
And did you get any inclination before that? Like, ooh, there's some hurdles or it just all seemed like normal.
Yes,
stuff.
But it's yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. However, I really felt like there was a marquee. I felt like it was happening so quickly that things were being thrown together. Mm-hmm. So I had a feeling that we might not be lasting as long as Phantom of the Opera.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't see.
It actually opened.
No.
Right?
No.
No.
Oh, no.
A week from going into the theater.
Yeah. I literally lived. They put me up across the street from the theater and I watched the theater get loaded in every day with the set.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Like, why would I think, oh, this isn't going to even get to opening night? Because
right.
millions and millions of dollars have been put into.
They're loading into the theater.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was. They were putting the set together. I went in. We, you know, like, picked out a dressing room, was ready to go. And
theater are you in, by the way?
It was the Long Acre on 48th.
Okay.
And so. Everyone's upset, obviously. The
yes.
writers and the cast, were you kind mm-hmm. of like, oh my God, I just moved back to New York. Well, I guess I'm going back to LA.
Yeah. That I mean, I was totally disappointed because, you know, it was very exciting. And,
of course.
And, but I felt more
how
like.
How was the material, though?
It was great. It was a lot of fun. And I would have had probably, like, it was, for me, probably like the most fun I would have had on a stage. You know,
wow.
I mean, was it going to win the Tony? No, I don't think the season of Hamilton, it was going to win the Tony. But I think that it would have stood out the season of Hamilton. So, you know, it was going to be a lot of fun. And so it was, you know, it's a bummer. But honestly, I wasn't too upset for me. I was just bummed out for everybody else. I felt
yeah.
more like a grief counselor.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I was like, it's going to be okay.
This happens,
this
guys.
Happens. And then
but
I was
is
like,
this, is this normal? I mean, you say it happens.
No,
right.
it does
is
not.
That, is that a normal? Does, I was going to say.
No, it does not happen.
When you're at that far along in the production, in the sense of like, we're loading in set, and they're spending, I'm assuming, millions of dollars.
I'm assuming they lost at least 5 million to 10 million.
Oh,
I mean, I'm just
God.
Throwing out
and,
numbers.
And it's just so the audience knows, Broadway shows don't happen overnight. It's like a six-year process.
This was being worked on for 10 years. It had been done
okay.
in Philadelphia and other cities. And what happened was, is Allegiance was it, with George Takei and
yes,
this was happening.
I listened to Howard Stern, so
yeah,
I know Allegiance
go.
Very well.
Yeah,
yeah,
and it closed abruptly. And so the
right.
Long Acre was open before Tony season. So the producers who had this show that had been in, you know, in the works for a long time jumped at the chance. And so they basically threw it together.
Got it.
Including emailing me and offering me a part. And so showed up. And that's basically the story. I don't know what happened behind the scenes, you know, but
yeah.
clearly there was not enough money there. So I was sad. But I didn't really, I wasn't fully invested in it. I only knew that it was there for like a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up going back to LA and I told my husband like, all right, well, get me pregnant because
mm-hmm.
clearly, you know, Broadway's done with me. But what had happened was, is that right before I came back, the director, Casey Hushin, who's an amazing person and wonderful director, she said, you know what, just for us, let's run through the show in its entirety, what we've worked on for the last 3 weeks for ourselves. and we'll invite, you know, people who worked on the show, designers, and, you know, we
kind
need
to give you guys a run.
Yes. Yeah. Well, just to be able to say goodbye to it and have some closure instead of literally what we were told, like, just leave.
Right.
It's like, no, we came back the next day. We grieved and we were able to run through the show. So we run through the show and then I went back to LA and 2 days later, my agent called and said,
but hold on. Stop. Yeah. I'm sorry. You run through the show in front of an audience?
We ran through the show for ourselves. So
okay, I have a question. I just need to know, do we know why it didn't happen?
No. They didn't have the money. So like an investor dropped out or something. But I don't really know.
Okay.
So, you know, at the end of the day, they just didn't have the money. Maybe somebody that he thought was going to give him a certain amount of money fell through. It just didn't happen. So somebody messed up. That's basically what it is at the end of the day, but we don't know the full story, and I don't really care to find out.
I want to Nancy Grace this.
Yeah, you go for it, but don't tell me about it. It's not. I don't want to know. So what happened is that we did this run through, and then I went back to LA, and I was like, "All right, Gerald, get me pregnant. I don't care about Broadway anymore." And my agent called 2 days after I got back and said, Rory, would you consider going back to Broadway? And I said, oh, no, I don't think so. I'm so heartbroken after what just happened. I don't think I could do it. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, what if it's for the King in Hamilton? And
ouch.
I said, I'm at LAX. I'm on the red eye. And she said, do you need to talk with
I'll
your
see you
husband?
Tomorrow.
And I said, no, I'll text him when I get
Had
there.
Had you seen the show at that point?
I saw the show off Broadway at the Public and knew it was the greatest thing
oh,
I'd
wow.
ever seen.
Oh, saw it? Oh, okay.
I went
wow.
to college
you
with Leslie Odom, who won the Tony for playing Burr. So he got me tickets when it was at the Public. And I truly thought it was the greatest piece of theater I'd ever seen. And I saw Brian Darcy James.
I wouldn't know because I can't get a ticket.
I know. One day.
Okay. One day.
All right. One day. I'll see a high school production once it's released.
There you go.
I saw Brian Darcy James play the King, and I was like, oh man, one day I want to play the King. And it just so happens that the casting director for Nerds is the casting director for Hamilton.
Oh,
and she was
chills.
In
That's
that
so great.
Room. When we did that run through, she was in the room. And
oh,
she's
kidding.
The one who called my agent. So
the room where it happened.
Yeah. So it's
this
crazy.
This seems to be your story. It's like
my career is one big accident.
It's 100%.
Steven's writing that one down.
Yeah,
it's just so funny because it's like literally that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's an accident.
Yeah,
like you should just like your intuition obviously should tell you I should just do everything because you never know what's going to happen.
That's true. That's why I will literally say yes to anything.
Great,
and
because
that's why
I've
you're
been
here.
Writing a musical that I want to pitch you, Rory.
Perfect.
I know.
But you know, you think about like all the bad things, like the Nerds not going, and then you never know what
never
that
know.
Thing is going to be. Like you and I just talked about on your podcast about how doing, you know, a web series that I wrote, you would never know that maybe one day that would be the springboard to something like Hollywood Darlings.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's always a lesson in you got to sometimes just enjoy the horrible things, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Enjoy the ride. And you can't connect the dots forward. You can only connect them backwards.
Right.
And say like, oh, yeah, clearly the reason that I'm where I am is because I played Richie Cunningham in Happy Days the musical and almost got gassed to death.
It's clear that that's why you're a star.
That's that. Like my story is definitely that is the most important part
How
of it.
How did you meet your husband?
We were set up when I was doing Happy Days the musical.
Are you serious? It's all Happy Days. I'm telling you.
Everything stems from Gary Marshall.
Absolutely, everything in my life stems from Gary Marshall and Happy Days.
Yeah.
Yes. It is. This is what happened. I'd been working on it for like 4 years and by 2008, it had been like 3 or 4 years, and I moved to New York.
It was the most steady employment of theater in Los Angeles.
Oh yeah, there was. We worked on it for a couple of years here, and then I moved to New York, did Spelling Bee,
right?
And then it came.
By the way,
to New York.
I know is Spelling Bee with the song Erection.
Yes.
Okay, so I did a musical theater class.
My Unfortunate Erection.
Yeah, My Unfortunate Erection. And I did that. By the way, that's fucking high, that shit. Yeah. So I did that song, but it was so much fun.
That's such a good show.
Such a great genius.
No, what happened was that I was living in Los Angeles, saw that in previews, and saw Jesse Tyler Ferguson play Coney Bear in previews, and Dan Fogler play William Barfay. And I was like, well, I have to move to New York immediately because this is so fantastic and I want to be a part of something. Yeah. I was like, this is, you know, where I need to be. And I literally left that preview of that show and called up my college roommate, Josh Gad. And I said, you have to hear and see this show called Spelling Bee. It's about to open on Broadway. There's a guy named Dan Fogler in it who's gonna win a Tony, mm-hmm. and you're the only human being on the planet who can replace him. And he did. He replaced him like a year later.
Wow.
And Josh still hasn't paid me a dime of commission. It's true. He's just terrible to me. but it was this crazy thing where Josh and I were in that show together, and then I moved to New York and get Spelling Bee. And that was my first Broadway show. And then we were in Mormon together. Yeah. So we did both
That's
of those
so weird.
Shows. It's very strange. Terrible accidents.
Disney on Ice next. Frozen on Ice.
Yes.
Aren't you both performing that?
Yeah.
Tito stood alive. Yeah, but I have a...
Oh, my God. Are you still drinking?
Yeah, I'm having another drink.
I have a tap
at the bar. Do you mind? Thanks.
Okay.
He has a tap at the bar.
Yeah.
I think you need to be cut off. Can they hear me?
No, I'm in Chicago. People drink here. There's guns.
Okay.
Guns and alcohol. That's Chicago.
But listen to me. My question for you, Rory, honestly, like training-wise, like what was your, like, did you... Where did you go to school?
I went to Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh.
Majored in music or what?
I actually didn't audition for any musical theater schools because I couldn't dance. And I thought, well, I'm not going to go to musical theater school. I'm not a dancer. I'll just learn how to act and sing on top of that and see what happens.
You're a mover.
I'm a mover, for God's sakes. Well, I got to Carnegie Mellon. And I started studying voice with a teacher privately from the musical theater department. And she had another student who was in my class who was in musical theater and acting. And his name was Josh Groban. And Yeah. And so he left school in our first semester. Don't know whatever happened to that guy.
Yeah. Probably in a gutter.
Yeah. Probably with my manager.
In New York. Yeah.
Starving.
So... I ended up taking his spot in the musical theater program after he left.
Wow.
And was forced to take dance classes, including tap, which I was terrible at and got a D.
I hated tap, too, because I went to musical theater school, too.
Yeah.
And that's the one class I hated was tap.
Oh, I got a D. D. The worst grade I've ever gotten. And so the day when I was doing all those musical theater...
Falap ball change.
Yeah, no, it's maddening. It's really hard. And the day that the South Park guys told me at one of the end of our readings that they were going to turn it off into a tap number.
Right.
They said, do you tap? And I was like, yes, I am basically Savion Glover. I am a total tapper.
And, who I worked with, by the way. Amazing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, he's the best. And I'm
just going to get a broom and sweep up all the names you're dropping over there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, that's what I do, sweetheart. Just get over it.
Get this man another vodka tonic.
No, it's soda.
So sorry. Lime. I am so sorry. This is why I didn't keep my job as bartender. I could never keep the drink straight. Right. So then I ended up tap dancing on a Broadway stage. And the only reason I could do it is because Josh Groban became a star.
Right.
If you think about it.
God,
Another damn accident. I have no idea why I have work. Like, everything
I will
about
tell
my
you
career
why.
Is a mistake.
No, I'll tell you why. Because you, A, have a beautiful voice.
Thank you.
And B, you're very funny. And C, you look like apple pie. You do.
Yeah, that's what
you
so,
are as American as apple yeah. pie. You I mean, are Richie Cunningham.
It makes sense that you're Richie Cunningham. It makes sense that you play.
But I also like somebody... literally look like apple pie. Like you're
delicious
saying it
and
as,
warm and
as
tasty.
A metaphor, but no. actually that's what I look like.
No, but you know, in every musical, right. in every great musical, there has to be there's always a role for a upstanding, sort of, you know, clean cut, like
yeah.
nice looking young man.
Yeah.
You know, who's yeah. earnest and
Well, Rory, you're at the point where the accent's like, you could literally accidentally shit your pants and you get a job out of it.
No, he'd win a well, Tony. This is what we're hoping yeah, for.
Maybe yeah, I need to shoot yeah. for better accidents and mistakes.
Yeah.
So I want to just go back a little bit to when you were living in L.A. and, you know, starving on the streets. There's a story that I was wondering if you wanted to tell yeah. about you and your roommates. And how, you know,
oh
kind of before all the Broadway, before
yeah,
you went back in.
Yeah, this is worst concert ever.
Worst concert
right.
ever.
So
hey, guys, before you get in this story.
Yeah.
Because I love you both. I hate to do this. My phone is literally going to die.
Okay.
So I'm going to head out.
Okay.
And enjoy the Chicago.
Peace. You've heard this
that
one.
That was your great exit? That's
well,
it?
I'm just letting you know that's what's happening. That's
okay.
the truth.
No, okay, that's
and
fine.
And this is, right. Maybe this accident will lead me to some show in Chicago that I'll get.
Or probably it'll lead me
a
to some show.
A better podcast.
It'll probably
Chicago
lead you
proper.
To your fourth vodka soda, which is really
maybe
an
I'll
issue.
Maybe I'll be on Pod Saves America or something.
All right. Lovely.
All right.
It's been real, my friend.
Nice talking with you.
Real.
Avoid the guns.
Thanks, Rory. Tell that story.
I will.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye, Steven.
I know he knows this story, so I know he was like, oh yeah, I heard that one before. Bye. Get me to
That's
the
what
bar.
Really happened.
Yeah. But basically it's just a good actor waiter story because I was a actor waiter with all my friends in Koreatown and we loved the band Modest Mouse.
Who didn't?
Yeah. Because it was 2000 and something and we were waiters and they had that song Float On, mm-hmm. You know, we'll all float on. Okay. And it like inspired us. So I bought all my two roommates, tickets to go see them at the Wiltern down the street from our apartment. And we got completely wasted and ended up going.
You working at Timmy's at this time?
No.
Okay.
No, this was pre-Timmy's. I think I don't know which job I had at that time. Which is clearly why it didn't last. It did right. not last, that job, whatever it was. So we went to the Wiltern to see Modest Mouse, and we were so drunk, we pushed our way all the way to the front of the crowd. Our seats were, I think, in the balcony, and somehow we pushed our way all the way to the front
like
of the stage.
Mosh pit.
Yeah. Well, there was no mosh pit because they were all stoned out of their minds and
right.
we were drunk.
Right.
So we try to start a mosh pit, literally, at a Modest Mouse, an indie band, chill stoner band crowd. And everyone's like not having it. They're like kids from Orange County whose right. parents dropped them off. And we're like raging partiers. And about four songs in, after not having said one word, the lead singer of Modest Mouse points at us and says, if you're just going to act like drunk assholes, why don't you just leave? And the entire Wiltern breaks out into applause and screaming and like it's like pitchforks and they're like chasing us out. We run out of the Wiltern. We were chased out by Modest Mouse fans and the lead singer. And I was so mad because I spent all that money
yeah.
on those tickets. So
and you didn't even get, I mean,
we didn't even
anthem.
Get to Float On.
No.
We didn't even get to hear Float On, the song. So I decide, my roommates go back to keep drinking at the house. And I decide I'm going to wait for the lead singer and give him a piece of my mind.
Because that always works.
Because what he needs to, he just doesn't realize what he's done.
Yeah, exactly.
So I wait for him an hour after the show outside the stage door. And he finally comes out and I'm like really going to tell him off, but I'm from Ohio. So he walks past me and I go, good job. And he like looks at me and he keeps walking. And then he goes into the Ralph's next door, the grocery store next door, and I follow him into the grocery store.
Because you're like, all right, I got
to
really...
I was like, I
didn't do it.
That
okay.
didn't seem to really make him understand how upset
I
am when
to
I told
say.
Him he did a good job.
Yeah.
So I follow him and I get in line and I grab a box of Franzia and he's in line first. There's only one line. It's 1 a.m. Right. So it's him, then a guy with all of his groceries. An older man does all his grocery shopping after midnight. Okay. And then me. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to tell this guy off, you know, after I buy this box of Franzia, I'll tell him. And the guy with all the groceries says to me, oh, do you only have that box of Franzia? Why don't you go ahead? And I was like, thank you, kind sir. I go in front of the guy with all the groceries and Mr. Modest Mouse turns to me and says, did you just cut in line in front of that guy to be closer to me? Because I was the one who told him good job. I was like, no, I did not, Mr. Modest Mouse. Excuse me, sir. And I'm like, did I cut in front of you or did you let me go in front of you? And the guy's like, I told you to go. I was like, thank you. Thank you. Mind your own business, Mr. Modest Mouse. And Mr. Modest Mouse says, I'd like Marlboro Lights. And that's when I was like my drunk thinking. I was like, you know what? I know how to get this guy back. And I go, I'll be paying for those cigarettes. And he's like, dude. And as soon as it came out of my mouth, I was like, that's the opposite of getting him back. But
it's the opposite of telling him.
Yeah. And he was like, dude, you do not have to buy me the cigarettes. Don't buy me cigarettes. And I was like, no, I am buying you these cigarettes. And you know when you're drunk and you're thinking like, this is
the way to do it. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, I'm buying you those cigarettes. And he goes, no, no, dude. I was like, this is my Ralph's, buddy. This is my store. And he goes, okay. I said, do you have a discount card? Because I do. I don't think so. These cigarettes are being bought by me. And he's like, all right. And he goes, 2 cartons of Marlboro Lights, please.
Oh,
which
my
is like
God.
Way more than I made in a shift.
Oh, yeah.
At wherever place I was fired from at that time. And I bought the lead singer of Modest Mouse, who kicked me out of his concert that night, 2 cartons of Marlboro Lights.
To tell him off.
But I say that I think in my way I did get him back because I don't know if he knows this, but smoking is terrible for you.
Terrible.
It's so bad for you. And I think he's going
to
have
Rory.
Some trouble down
that
the
was
line.
Like passive reverse
I'm playing
psychology.
The long game,
aggressive.
Christine.
Yeah.
It's the long game.
No, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Take that, Mr. Modest Mouse. But yeah, that was my worst concert ever.
Oh, God. I feel like it's more maybe of a worst telling off. It's the worst tell-off ever.
That's just true. Really
awful
that's
on several
true.
Levels.
That's how a Midwesterner really gets
oh,
back at
God.
Somebody.
Oh, God. You'll always be apple pie to me. See, that's it. It always comes back to that.
I'm not going to have a headshot anymore when I go on auditions. I'm just going to give pictures of apple pie.
There you go.
That's my career.
Rory, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's
thank
such a pleasure and such a delight to have you
I
here.
I adore you, and I'm so happy to be on this podcast. And
Can you tell our listeners where they can find you on social?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on Twitter at Rory O'Malley. I'm on Instagram at Mr. Rory O'Malley because I'm more formal on Instagram,
yeah,
I guess.
Totally.
On Facebook as well, you know, I'm always tweeting about Hamilton musicals.
And you have a lot of other Broadway stars. If you're a Broadway fan, you'd want to check out your podcast.
My podcast. Wonderful. You should be my PR person.
No problem.
I have a podcast called Living the Dream, and I talk to a lot of folks in theater and in show business about the ups and downs of the business and their crazy stories about how they got to where they are.
That's awesome. And you can also see, if you're in the San Francisco area, you can see Rory playing the King right now
in
Hamilton. And then you'll be coming to Los Angeles.
Yes, I'll be in Los Angeles starting in August and here till the end of the year.
At the Pantages. Make sure you got your tickets already because there was a line around the block.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We will be back next week with an all-new podcast, so make sure you guys check it out. You can subscribe to us. That would be awesome. Thanks, guys, for listening. See you next week. Bye. Big thanks to Rory O'Malley for that awesome interview. And you can find Rory on Twitter at Rory O'Malley or on Instagram at Mr. Rory O'Malley. I think he's a little more formal on Instagram. So you can find me, as always, at Yo Lakin on all social media.
And me at Alec Led. What's my Instagram?
Oh my God. We have literally got to sit down and have like a lesson about things.
I don't know.
If you post one more GD video or picture of me without makeup on, I'm going to sue you.
Okay. Anyways, what is my Instagram?
I literally don't know.
Is it Alec Led? Yeah, I'm at Alec Led all the way around.
I don't follow you.
Okay.
And check out Stephen Ray Morris at Stephen Ray Morris, our amazing producer and engineer. If you have anything you would like to share with us, maybe a story or a worst, tale that happened to you, you can email us at worsteverpodcast@gmail.com. And you never know, we might call you, talk to you about it on air, or maybe even read your story on the air. So,
and you can follow us on Twitter at worsteverpc.
Or on Instagram at worsteverpodcast.
Yeah.
Whatever. Bye.
Bye.